The Scroll, Chapter 15, Joy. A young girl's exaggerated whisper was followed by a burst of muffled laughter and the rush of feet down the stairs. A woman's voice called out in anger from the apartment below, and the laughter immediately ceased. Qohelet could hear the children retreating farther down the stairs, along with a constant flow of their mother's irritation. He knew that harsh voice well. She was one of those people driven by a perpetual need to control others. As a result, she possessed the ability to quickly and effectively stifle joy in her children and anyone else around her. Qohelet wiped the sleeve over his sweaty brow and shook his head. Would there ever be a time when he wasn't constantly evaluating others? He had been quietly watching people since he was a child, and that was likely the reason he had such a hard time relating to others in a meaningful way. It was difficult to enter freely into a relationship when you were always questioning motives. He pointed his pen to the sky. All this thinking and contemplation is rather pointless, for amidst all the masses of people, I am insignificant. Within the span of history, I am so transitory. Even within my own head, I feel lost and alone. I try to make sense of it all, but I always come up short. Then when I tell myself to quit thinking about it, I just go around in circles again. He shook his head and began to write. My days had been dedicated to a careful observation of all the work people do under the sun. I hardly slept as I tried to figure out God's intent for us, but no one can fully comprehend everything that takes place under the sun. Despite my best efforts to search it out, I could not understand it. Even if a wise person claims to know what God is doing, no one can truly know the mind of God. But the truth of that statement did not stop him from trying. What his future might hold was fueling his imagination, and he looked for any indication of what new troubles he and Benjamin might be heading into now that they were free of Moriah. When I reflected on this, I realized that although the lives of the righteous and the wise are in God's hands, no one knows if success or failure awaits them. And a final destiny will come to all, the righteous and the wicked, the good and the bad, the holy and the unholy, those who worship God and those who do not. The blameless will die the same as the sinner, and those who make promises to God face the same end as those who are afraid to make them. Indeed, the most distressing fact about living under the sun is that every one of us will eventually die. That knowledge fills our hearts with sadness and our minds with worry while we live, and then we die anyway. At least while we are alive, we have hope, for as they say, a live dog is better off than a dead lion. Qohelet leaned back in his chair, put his hands behind his head, and looked out over the market. Here I am, an old dog, also scrounging for scraps. The odor of his sweaty body rose up to his nose, and he put his arms down at his side. He was as smelly as Esther's hound, but at least he was alive and able to enjoy the simple rewards of the day. A dead lion was a curiosity, but you could only look at it for so long before life would pull you on and a lion would be forgotten. We the living know that one day we must die, but the dead know nothing more, they have no further influence, and no one remembers them for long. Their love, hate, and envy have long since vanished. Never again will they have a part in anything that happens under the sun. The sun on his face felt good, but for each day it warmed him, it was also marching him closer to the day when it would rise and no longer find him under its steady gaze. Life passed quickly, but unfortunately many people were so caught up in the inevitability of death, they forgot how to live. Qohelet studied the basket of fruit and wine that Eli had left on his desk. The man was a master of presentation. The sunlight and shadows on the fruit and wine made them look more like a painting than real objects. The basket was a feast for the eyes, but it could not stay that way. Its contents were designed to be consumed, not just looked at. Left untouched, the fruit would rot and return to the dust. Qohelet chuckled. It was the perfect example of what had become the central theme of his wisdom, a wonderfully paradoxical teaching, for he had discovered that the enjoyment of life's pleasures also required that your time would be used up and spent. Each moment and day you enjoyed also brought you one day closer to the end. Seeing a child take her first steps brought great pleasure to her mother, yet those first steps would eventually lead her daughter out the door to live on her own. Only by embracing the reality that every beginning was moving towards an ending could the simple pleasures of life be truly enjoyed. Dipping his pen, Qohelet bent over the scroll and wrote as rapidly as he dared. Finishing the final word with a flourish, he slapped his pen down on the desk and went to his window. Below him, people were milling about, and booths made of wood and covered with palm fronds were springing up across the market. Youthful joy sprang up inside him, and Qohelet leaned as far out the window as he dared. He called out to the street below the words he had just written. "Go then, eat your bread with gladness, drink your wine with a joyful heart, for today your work is blessed by God." As his voice filled the market square, all the people in the street stopped in place. They gazed up at him, but no one responded. Their mild-mannered Qohelet had never spoken this loudly or from on high before. Hopeful faces looked up at him like a flock of sheep, begging the shepherd to lead them on to fresh pasture and a cool stream. Qohelet continued, "Put on your best clothes, use your finest perfume, and enjoy each futile day of your fleeting life with the people you love, for these pleasures are God's gift to you in your toilsome labor under the sun." A few nodded. Esther smiled broadly, and Qohelet stopped. Esther gestured for him to keep going. She knew what always followed this statement in his teaching, but Qohelet knew it was not what the people wanted to hear. It was a wise teaching, and it was the very reason to move on and enjoy your days, to invest yourself fully into your work. He swallowed and went on. "Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might, for in the grave where you are going, there is neither working, nor planning, nor knowledge, nor wisdom." For a brief moment, the market stood frozen in place, and then, as if on cue, a gust of wind rippled through the awnings of the marketplace. A metal pot clattered to the ground, and a child cried out. The scene below resumed as if the passing wind had completely erased his words. Only Esther kept looking at him, nodding and smiling. Only one person who could grasp his message and would actually live it out. She waved and retreated into the booth that was being constructed in front of Eli's shop. Qohelet retreated back into the shadows of his room. No doubt today's gossip would include chatter about the possibility that he was losing his mind in his old age. He should have known better. For years he had been quietly teaching those same concepts at the well, and few would stop to listen. There was no reason to think that he would get through to people just because he shouted from his window. The door opened, and Eli strode into the room, a broad smile on his face. "Ah, it is good to see you have your energy back. Esther says it's because of her miracle porridge. She is going to make it for you every day." He pointed out the window and lowered his voice. "But let me tell you, my friend, you may like that porridge today, but I can tell you from experience that in a few weeks you may find it a little less enjoyable." Eli stood in front of him and put his hands on Qohelet's shoulders. "Ah, it is good to see you still with us. For a while I did not think you would make it." "Oh, I've never been that sick in my life. Old age has definitely weakened my body." "It was the stress of dealing with Caleb. At least that's what the healer said." "What happened with Caleb? Did he sell the bird?" Eli looked across to Caleb's apartment. "I have seen a light in his room a few times, but no one has seen much of him. The healer told people he blinded your bird, and now everyone is angry with him. You are not the only one who enjoyed that song every morning." "She hasn't sung again?" "I think he may have sold her, for he has managed to buy himself enough food and wine to stay indoors for a long while." Eli turned away from the window and leaned back against the ledge. "I see you are writing again." "Yes, I am feeling better. My mind is sharper, and recent events fit well with some of my teachings. Too well, in fact." "You should read it to me. I have some time. A few of the younger men are helping to set up my booth, because it needs to be even larger this year." Qohelet sat at the desk and lifted the scroll. "Yet I also observed that the race is not always to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor does food always come to the wise, wealth to the brilliant, or success to the educated, for time and chance happen to us all. No one knows what tomorrow will reveal. As fish are caught in a cruel net, or birds are captured in a snare, so people are trapped by terrible times that fall unexpectedly upon them." Eli nodded. "I have heard you say that proverb many times, but it makes much more sense to me now." Qohelet gestured to the window. "Yes, of all the wisdom I have sought to teach the people, this point is one of the most hotly debated. Everyone wants to see their lives as being continually guided by a greater purpose and intention. No one likes the idea of a world where time and chance are always at play. The thought that their lives are subject to the random vicissitudes of a broken world is very difficult to accept." Eli grunted his agreement. If bad times can fall on anyone at any time, then what's the point of it all? Qohelet leaned back in his chair and smiled. He loved discussing these concepts with Eli. His friend waved his hands in the air and went on. And then there are those who waste all their days interpreting the time and chance events that come their way. The good things are indication of God's blessing, and the negative things are punishment for something they or one of their family members has done wrong. Qohelet nodded. And because human knowledge is limited, any person who can remotely substantiate their claim to know God's plan for others can set themselves up to interpret the signs. If time and chance work in their favor, the masses will turn to those leaders for answers like the flowers of the field following the sun. Eli's beard swayed with his deep nods. Their followers multiply along with the belief that their leader has all the answers the world needs. Qohelet pointed at Eli. Then those leaders create a religious system to fill in the cracks between time and chance, to give their followers a sense of security, a sense that they won't ever fall into those random cracks. He stared at Eli a moment. So in a strange sense, their religion actually becomes the worship of time and chance. When good things come your way, you take it as a sign of God's being happy with you, and when bad times happen, you must discover why God is displeased. And there's always a religious leader of one type or another on hand to tell you what God is thinking. Eli laughed and his eyes sparkled. Now your thoughts are getting ahead of me. I will have to mull that one over for a while. Qohelet returned to his chair. When I look out my window, I see a world full of disasters and crime and wars, a constant stream of negative events that keep people in continual fear. But time and chance also apply to good days, and times of relative peace are wasted and ruined by debilitating fears of what might come next. Eli pointed at Qohelet's scroll. And that is why wisdom is needed. In a perfect world, there is no need for the practical understanding of how to work within the realities of time and chance. Qohelet smiled at his friend. I like the way you put that. We seek knowledge, but it takes wisdom to navigate through life and decide on the best course of action. Wisdom must be sought out, and when you find it, you must listen carefully. He picked up the scroll. I noted an example of wisdom's effects in such a time. A powerful king besieged a small city. Within the walls lived a poor man who could have saved the city by his wisdom, but no one listened to him. His wisdom was better than strength, but that man's advice was not heeded. Although the quiet words of the wise are far better than the shouts of a foolish king, and wisdom is more powerful than weapons of war, a little foolishness can destroy much good. Eli grunted. It is true. History has shown us time and time again that power can be defeated by wisdom. But often our leaders are blinded by their own perceptions. They can't see what is right before their eyes. People up there, he gestured toward the palace, do not listen to wise alternatives to war. And it only takes one leader to panic and mix in foolishness, and everything falls apart. Qohelet raised the scroll higher and read the next line. Just as a few dead flies give perfume a bad smell, so a little folly corrupts the greatest wisdom. Eli stroked his beard. I haven't heard that proverb before, but it fits so well. Our perfume seller works hard to create new scents and attract his customers, but his powerful aromas also bring in the flies from Esther's fish shop. He has complained to her about his customers who leave his bottles open until the flies get in and drown. It only takes a few to ruin an entire batch of a delicate perfume. Qohelet nodded in return. And that's the way that folly works its way through all human endeavors. The lifelong work of the wise can be undone in a single moment by one foolish person. Although the heart of the wise will follow what is right, the heart of the fool always leads him astray. Even as he walks down the street, the fool shows off his ignorance. They looked at each other and said one name simultaneously, Nabal. Eli shook his head as he sat on the bed. You must have been thinking of the snake incident. Qohelet shrugged. It's pretty hard not to. I don't think anyone will forget that one. Poor Jacob. He wanted so badly to see his son become wiser, but Nabal prefers to play the fool. Eli was about to say more, but Esther called from below. He leaned out the window. I'll be right there. He turned toward the door. His face was beaming. Qohelet raised his eyebrows. She needs some help with the booth. I need to go. He shrugged and quickly exited the room. Qohelet turned back to his desk. his thoughts circling around Nabal and the snake.